Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Good Life. You know, every Saturday, noon to one, it's the lunch hour with yours truly, Good Life Guy. My guest today is Bree Arthur. She's known for her leadership in the suburban foodscape movement, and that's pretty much what we're talking about today. She's got two books, Foodscape Revolution, which came out in 2017, and her most recent book, Gardening with Grains. They are certainly companion books, or should be, and you can get them at Amazon.com. You can learn more about Bree at BreeGrows.com, and we'll tell you about an event up in Kansas City a little bit later. Bree, we talked about grains and planting things that those of us who live in Kansas are pretty fond of looking out over those fields of grain. But then my thought, you said it's nice for the birds to eat it, and I get that, and that's a good thing. But tell me some of the ways that we would use some of these grains that you've mentioned when it becomes harvest time and how that evolves in the landscape beauty. And just the thought of watching a green field turn to brown gives you two dynamic appearances in your garden. Talk about the food aspect, though.
Well, you know, that's always at the heart of it. And I will tell you that the first time I saw wheat turn amber, I fell to my knees. I had, you know, the song playing in my head on repeat, and I probably took 1,000 photographs. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm from Michigan. It's not that I've never seen wheat before, but it was the most extraordinary landscape feature that I had ever witnessed. Then I snapped back to reality and thought, oh my God, how do I harvest this? I don't have any equipment, you know, like homeowners don't typically have access to combines. We threw a cocktail party, and I always laugh about this because, you know, everything I do is a learning experience. And I've learned that having my adult friends drinking gin is not the way to get work done at all. So the following year, I got involved with some local junior master gardener groups and some homeschool groups. And we actually engaged what I love to call my child labor force. And the kids really find this harvesting, threshing, winnowing process to be just like out of this world. First of all, it's something that most people have never done ever, but you can count on an 8-year-old having never been exposed to this. And it's just an amazing thing. Last year, I grew barley in my big wave bed, which basically dissects the middle of my front lawn. And the junior master gardeners from Cumberland County came in and harvested that barley in about 15 minutes. It was the most streamlined, efficient experience that I have ever witnessed. And then they were able to go through the threshing process. We have a homemade thresher made with a drill. And then we winnow using a box fan. And, you know, you're basically blowing the chaff off so that the grain is in its raw form. And from there, you can do any number of things. Like, we use the barley to brew beer. We grind the flour so that we can make flour tortillas or blueberry crisps or any number of meals. And that's why I really wanted to include a recipe section because, you know, generally we all take grains for granted. You know, we're really far removed from our carbohydrate sources. And then when you think about it, you're not usually taking a grain from its raw form and cooking with it, because we buy things pre-processed now. Yep. So it's a confusing experience for people in 2020 to understand what to do with raw seed. So a chef friend of mine was so generous to help me create these recipes for each of the different grains, and making sure that they're simple and, you know, easy to apply in your kitchen. And actually, they're all kid tested. I've had my crew of neighborhood helpers make every single one of those recipes, and they all love it, in part because they were a part of growing the plant. Yeah. And I think when we talk about educating the next generation, it really does mean a lot for it to be full circle. The kids plant the seed, they're more likely to try eating it when it's time to harvest. And we teach them that now when they're 8, they're going to grow up to be better land stewards than past generations have.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think gardening with grains is so cool. And I have a place where I think I could grow rice, and it would help with the, you know, the pooling water after a heavy rainstorm and the muck that my dog tracks into the house through that area. Let's transition and talk about the Foodscape Revolution. This is your book that has been out for a while, and the subtitle is Finding a Better Way to Make Space for Food and Beauty in Your Garden. And all of us know that herbs, especially if they're young and fresh and small, are just such a pretty thing to look at. And we always have herb pots on the back deck, and they do really pretty well. They don't suffer the plant hospice environment as much as some of our flowering plants. But this is something that I think is a killer idea. When you think of what, for example, some of the beautiful dark leaf lettuces look like when they're growing, you know, it's work. This is something that annually you're going to be out there planting, but you kind of do that anyway. And what are some of the most common things that pretty much anyone in our zone, whether it be in a pot or in their basic garden, what are some of the common things that will not only add beauty, but give you good quality things to eat at the end of season?
It's like, I always tell people, grow what you like to eat. I don't want to tell you, oh, grow this, you know, random pepper that you might not like the flavor of. I always tell my design clients, you know, write down what you've eaten for a week, and then let's look at the vegetables that keep recurring on that list, so that I can instruct you to grow them in a meaningful way and ultimately change a habit at the grocery store. You know, it's unrealistic to think that anybody's going to grow everything that they eat. That's just not the world we live in. But, you know, if you eat a lot of onions or garlic, then those should be things that you put as a priority in your garden. You know, it's things like that. I mean, I'd like to focus on practicality over all things. Most people have animal problems in their landscapes, you know, deer or groundhogs or rabbits or, God forbid, the armadillos, which are encroaching both on Kansas and North Carolina, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, so let's think creatively about how we can plant landscape bed edges to help deter those browsing mammals, not only from eating our vegetable crops, but eating our ornamental plants, too. You know, I laugh about it, but it's true. If a botanical name starts with an H, the deer are going to eat it to the point of no return. You know, hydrangea, heuchera, hemera callis, hosta, those are all their top favorite things, and people spend a lot of money on those plants just to look out one day and see them eaten to the ground.
Yeah.
So I encourage my audiences to, you know, think about planting a bed edge of something like a potato. You know, potatoes are in the Solanaceae family, so their foliage is poisonous. So if you plant that along your edge, not only is it easy to get to, it doesn't have the root pressure, so you'll be able to dig your harvest and, you know, actually eat your homegrown potatoes. But through the duration of growing, it gives an insurance policy for everything planted behind it.
I'll be darned.
And, you know, I think I like to start with a list of things like arugula, potatoes, garlic, onions, peppers. They're all practical. They're all low maintenance. And they all deter browsing mammals. And generally, most people eat something on that list. Yeah. You know, instead, I see at garden centers, you know, they're growing interesting food props, but they're not necessarily practical. And I don't like that. I want you to vegetable garden in a way that you actually use what you are growing. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, you might as well just have flowers. So I think that in today's era, we've gotten to be very impractical with how we vegetable garden. You know, we confine our vegetables often to the farthest corner of our backyard, and we invest 3/4 of our budget in lumber. And we don't think about, you know, the ease of watering or actually having it on our path where we notice our food crops when they need to be watered. Or, you know, you've got like 15 minutes from harvesting a zucchini before it turns into a baseball bat. You know, you got to have that on your radar. And that was the whole motivation for writing this book, is just to, you know, bring people's attention to the idea that you can grow vegetables in a really stylish way, and you can be more logical about where you place them. And by using your landscape square footage, you know, I like to really look at open areas within existing landscapes. So, you know, you are able to crop rotate more easily because you have more available square footage than you would in, say, 1 or 2 raised beds. And, you know, it's all about crop rotation for being able to make sure that you don't develop disease and insect problems. So the foodscape revolution was really born out of just trying to be more logical with my allocation of time and resources, and also trying to trick my homeowner association.
Oh, I love it. You know, everybody here, you know, will plant some jalapeno peppers and some tomato plants. And I know a few people that have had success with tomatoes, but rarely. I know firsthand that you can grow magnificent peppers here. I did that 2 summers ago with the help of a friend of mine out in far western Wichita and Goddard. But I think that my plots on the patio are nice, but I just don't think it's enough. You know, one of my classic examples of something that I've had some luck with, if I'm smart and have a big enough pot, is rosemary. And I think of, obviously it's a different temperate zone out in California, but a lot of wineries have hedges out of rosemary that are there year round, and they're big and huge, and you walk by and it smells so pretty, and when they flower it looks so great. But rosemary, who would have thought, something that, yes, we use to in the kitchen, but it is probably one of the coolest herbs to plant as far as appearance is concerned.
I completely agree. And, you know, low maintenance in that it's very drought and heat tolerant, and the animals don't like it. And that's, herbs in general are so practical just because they have that strong smell. And it appears that humans are the only ones that enjoy their flavor.
There's a lot of things that you have in the book, both Foodscape Revolution and Gardening with Grains, that I didn't know. And I forgot to mention, one of the things that I learned out of Gardening with Grains, last month on the 24th was National Peanut Day.
Oh, yes.
And if you'd asked me, are peanuts a grain? I would have said, no, I don't think so. Peanuts are a grain, really?
Well, technically they're a legume, but grains and legumes frequently get lumped, and for good reason. So it's amazing when I started researching for the grain book, how much I learned that I was never exposed to. And one of the really cool things that was mentioned is how grains and legumes should always be planted together, because the grains have deep roots, often exceeding 3 foot deep, and they scavenge nutrients. And so they bring nutrients that are, you know, way below the subsoil back up to the surface, and that will help feed your next round of crops. Hmm. Well, legumes fix nitrogen. So the two combined will make it so that you can have naturalized fertility. So, of course, is an old farming technique that's never, in my knowledge, been utilized for home gardening. But what was really cool is that the nutritional combination of a grain and legume allows your body to absorb more nutrients. So it's a classic example. Americans, we love, you know, wheat bread and peanut butter. Well, that's a grain and a legume combined. Or rice and beans. like in Spanish cultures. Every culture has a grain legume combo that are really essentially nutrient dense, easy to digest meal solutions that are inexpensive and they have a long shelf life, so they're very practical. And I just thought that was the coolest thing when I really started thinking about how I cook, making sure that I have grains and legumes always represented so that I get the most out of the meal that I'm eating.
Isn't that something, that the synergy of the two planted items together and then having them on the plate together too? Pretty cool. Bree, can you stay with us for another segment?
I would love to.
Excellent. Well, I want to talk more about herbs because that's something that I can plant on my deck and use, and we've had decent luck with that. Folks, I'm glad you've been listening. I hope if you just tuned in, you know that you can get the podcast after the fact, knssradio.com. Start cruising around for audio and then find the good life, and there you got it. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.